That and I couldn't find a senator right.
Okay, I'm going to call to order the Conference Committee on Survivorship. It is Senate File 683, House File 482. Thank you for all coming today on this bright and early Monday morning. I'm going to start by going around the table and introducing ourselves. My name is Kiri Dietzik. I'm a senator from Northeast and Southeast Minneapolis, the area with the U in Augsburg. And then Senator Metzen.
Senator Metzen, South St. Paul, Inver Grove Heights, West St. Paul, Mendota Heights, Mendota, part of Egan. That's about it. That's enough. 80,000 people like the other senators.
Good morning. I'm Joe Atkins, State Representative. I represent part of the area that Jim represents.
Morning. Tony Cornish from south of Mankato, Good Thunder Vernon Center, Blue Earth County.
John Lesh, St. Paul District 66A, home of Rice Street and the famous boxer Tommy Gibbons, who took a dive for Jack Dempsey in a prize fight in 1923.
Herb Brooks.
Well, Herb. Lucky they're dead.
I thought it was before.
Yeah. And then we'll introduce staff, starting at that end.
I'm Stacy Stout. I'm with House Republican Research.
Pete Voyevich, Legislative Assistant to Representative Atkins.
Trevor Oliver with DFL Caucus Research.
Mary Mullen with House Research.
Chris Kwapik, Committee Administrator.
Kathy Pania, Senate Counsel.
And if you guys want to yell over there, I'll get it for the record. We have Mary Underwood, my staff, Adam Roberts, DFL Research, Linnea, and I don't know your last name. Michelson, thank you. Republican Research, and Faye Sparks, Committee Clerk for Senator Metzen. So I asked Kathy Pontius, because this is kind of a complicated issue. A lot of people's eyes glaze over if you're not an attorney. So I asked Kathy Pontius if she could kind of just briefly discuss the issue.
Madam Chair, I'll try to do this so nobody's eyes glaze over. At least on the surface, it's fairly straightforward. Basically, the bills on both sides amend Minnesota law. The current rule is that all personal injury actions die with the person, so to speak. And this bill would continue actions after death in certain cases. And if you take a look at the side-by-side, which you should have in your packets, probably the biggest difference between the two bills is that the Senate bill only applies to pending actions. So those continue when the person dies. Where the House bill, if you look at like 1.1 of the Senate language where it says pending action, the House bill just says an action does not abate by the death or disability of a party. So it would apply regardless of whether it was pending. Then the House carves out an exception where you see the paragraph B there. So for these specified actions involving like nursing homes and similar facilities, in those cases, the action would have to be pending. The person dies. And then you see this the same distinction if you go to Section 2 on both sides. On 1.14, the Senate language refers to a pending action. And then the House is similar if you go down to... there's one difference on 2.1. There's a reference to a trustee, which I think a personal representative trustee, which the word trustee isn't in the Senate language. I think that might be a reference to the trustee under the wrongful death statute. And then there's also a reference on page 2, line 4 of the House language to general damages suffered before the decedent's death. And there's one other little side issue in these cases. In wrongful death actions under current law, you can bring an action for general damages. They do survive in certain cases, and those are the kinds of damages that are basically easily quantified, things like medical expenses and lost wages. So that's something that you can recover, that a trustee can recover under current law, regardless of whether the case is pending or not. And then again, the House, because of the general rules that it applies to all actions, if you go down on 2.5, it's got that carve out for the nursing home type facilities where the action would have to have been pending at the time of death. And then the other difference is the House repeals the wrongful death provision I just mentioned dealing with general damages. I think if you follow the general rule that all the actions survive, you don't need that language in the law anymore. But if you go with just the pending actions, then you would still need that language in the wrongful death statute.
And that's the 5.7.
Yeah, Madam Chair, that's the 573.01 is the general survival of or non-survival language in current law. 573.02 is something different that's right in the wrongful death statute, which is repealed in the House bill.
Any questions, members?
So, Madam Chair, that on the repealer, there was an additional section on the House language, 573.02. That's not in the.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Senator Metzen. Yeah, that's the. There is a provision under current law under which, in wrongful death cases, you can still get special damages. And basically, if you go with the House language, which continues all of these causes of action, then you don't need that anymore. Whereas if you go with the Senate language, then you still want that language in the bill or in the current law. So depending on what decision you make with respect to pending kind of drives what you want to repeal.
Thank you.
Okay, now we have a list of people set up to testify. So if you'll... Do you have any other?
No.
Okay.
No, that's it.
Okay. So we'll have people come up, and then if you can just state your name for the record. I think the first one is Jan Reshetar, Paul Blahn, or Blom.
Good morning, Madam Chair. We have a batting order, so I will. I'll go first. Madam Chair and members, my name is Joel Carlson. I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Association for Justice in support of the legislation before you, and I would like to just briefly talk about the procedural history that got us to where we are. When the Senate heard the bill on the last day of committee deadline, that's where this whole issue of pending cases arose, and we had talked with the care providers about wanting to know about bad care right away so that they could take action. And if you look at the Senate bill, it provided a number of unintended consequences that I wanted to point out to the members. Number one, it has the unintended consequence of requiring all claims to be pending prior to death. So if I am... hopefully not, but if I'm killed by a drunk driver, for example... There's no way for that case to be pending, yet it would not survive under the current Senate language. And while that is unintended, that is clearly the outcome of that language, because it would have to be pending to survive, and you're talking about situations where you wouldn't even envision that it would occur. In addition to that pending problem, the issue of being pending a problem in the Senate language, you'll notice in the repealer in the Senate language and in the House language, your contract claims that you own, whether it's a house fire that burns down or an automobile policy, your contract claims currently survive your death, and that is in 573.01. In the Senate language, those contract claims would only survive if they were pending. So if you died in a house fire, your estate would not have a claim under the Senate language. And I believe these to be unintended consequences, but that is the result of the language in the Senate bill, because there's no way to know of the injury before the event has occurred, and it would never be pending at the time of the injury. The House on the floor made an amendment to try and address that problem, which is consistent with the House and Senate bills as they were introduced, by just saying your action survives. And I've got a handout that I'd like the page to provide to the committee, because a number of legislators have asked me, you know, what do other states do relative to the survival of actions? And we started with our surrounding states and made the cone bigger, and we can go all the way coast to coast, and you'll find that every state, with a couple of limitations like Idaho, but every state allows your claim and your damages to survive your death for the benefit of your estate and your family. And so what the House did, consistent with its bill as it was introduced, it said that an action does not abate by the death or disability of a party. But then in talking with the care providers, we came up with a provision that would allow a claim to move forward if they knew about it, if it was pending. And that can be problematic as well, but that was what we attempted to do to try and address the issue for the only group that had talked to us negatively about the bill, which was the care providers, and they didn't object to the claims surviving, but they wanted to have some way of being notified of them. And so that's why on the House side, on 1.11 and 1.21, you'll see that provision as it relates to care providers, home facilities. The House then went on to correct the internal reference with the repealer, as Senator Metzen mentioned, on 573.02 subdivision 2, which limits your recovery to only your special damages, which are your economic losses that you may have sustained before death. And just so that we can be clear, you know, non-economic damages, the damages we're talking about, are just critical and essential for consumers. To allow these claims to go forward only with economic losses, which simply replaces what was wrongfully taken from you, does not provide for any recovery for the family or the injured person. And so we need to make sure that we understand that non-economic damage is that compensates you for your loss, for pain, suffering, disfigurement, embarrassment that you suffered before death, are very important to this concept and go forward in every state. And we hope that you will try and address that that problem in through this bill. Madam Chair and members, I have three people with me that would like to provide some testimony to you. Jan Rushitar from Alden and Paul and Morris Bloom, also from southeastern Minnesota. They are family members of some very seriously injured victims in Minnesota in the Albert Lea area, all of whom had their cases dismissed when they sought justice for their family members. All of their cases were dismissed under our current law, 573.01. And it is our hope that you repeal that law and replace it with something that works. And I would like to ask Ms. Rushitar to start her testimony, and we're happy to answer any questions that the committee members might have. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Rushitar. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Jan Rushitar.
You can begin.
I'd like to introduce you to Grace Rushitar. She's officially known as my mother-in-law, late mother-in-law. She's personally known as Mom. I lost both of my parents when I was in my 40s, and she and my father-in-law picked up where my parents left off. So I don't call her Mom just to be saying the right thing. I call her Mom because she was indeed a second mom to me. I have two stories that I want to tell you. One is my personal one, and one is a group story. Because of what happened to Mom, I became thrown into a situation that I never thought I would ever be in. I certainly knew nothing about elder abuse. I'd never heard of it. I didn't have any idea what it could possibly mean. But I got my feet wet when I was thrown into the deep end of the pool. It's been 6 long years since 15 residents, our mothers, our fathers, aunts, and loved ones, were identified as provable cases of elder abuse. The first 3 months, we spent wondering if it could be true, and if it was true, what had happened to them. The next 4 months, after having been confirmed that they had been indeed abused, was a black abyss. We had no one to talk to. We were not allowed to find out who other victims were or their family members. We were not allowed to have any understanding of what was going on. At one point in January of 2009, we had a town hall meeting. After that meeting, family members came up to us and introduced themselves, saying, "My mom, my dad, my aunt, my uncle, my brother, my sister was one of the victims." That very night, we formed FANHA, which is Families Against Nursing Home Abuse. We wrote letters to legislators, public figures, appeared on radio and TV shows, and interviewed for articles in newspapers. We spoke at conferences and meetings and schools. We begged the public and officials to see what was going on. We pleaded with them to help us find justice for our loved ones, but there was not going to be any. As the months dragged on into a year and then two, with each decision in favor of the victims being appealed, time dragged on. And with that came the deaths of one victim after another, Mom included. To say there is no harm done to anyone but the victim is to say that the mother of an abused child is unaffected by what her child has gone through. Lives of the victims were changed until their deaths. Lives of their family members were changed forever. Spouses suffered declining health, depression, and conditions related to extreme stress, and even early death. We watched with sympathy and complete understanding as our fellow members cried in agony. We held hands and we offered support to those who were so disillusioned and so disgusted by what had been done. We went to funeral after funeral as we said our goodbyes to those we loved and who had loved us so unconditionally. We pounded our fists, we cursed those who had been so vicious, and then we realized each one of us had come to a situation that was life-altering, and we would never again see life in the same way as we had before 2008. Yes, we wanted justice, but not for revenge, not for money, not for punishment. We wanted justice for our moms, our dads, our sisters, our brothers, our aunts, our uncles, and our friends. They deserved that. They had a right to that. Their human rights were violated, and it seemed no one cared. Their human dignities were stripped away, and the abuse of dogs was more important. Their lives and ours were changed, but the responsibility for the horrendous actions taken was no one's. How is it that wrongdoers could be so rewarded if they just waited out? Why did their responsibility end when their victims died? Why was it buried with them? How much more of an indignity could we possibly have done to them? We beg you, hold the wrongdoers accountable. Don't let this malfeasance continue.
Thank you. I don't know which Mr. Blom wants to start.
Madam Chairman, my name is Paul Blum, and I'm from Briceland, Minnesota. which is about 30 miles west of Albert Lea, where my aunt Sylvia Wolf worked for many years as the Fremont County Public Health Nurse. These are two of her pictures here, one when she graduated from nursing school at the Navy Hospital in Albert Lea, and one later in her career. We are here, or I should say I am here, you know, kind of being her voice for what took place. And we found out we couldn't get a telephone number for her, being that we weren't immediate family. The HIPAA laws were not allowing us to find out information because we were not her immediate family. Things just continued, you know, to roadblock after roadblock because we're there trying to take care of our aunt in her dementia years. I guess getting back to where it really started, our aunt drove down the interstate highway the wrong way. And thank goodness she didn't kill anyone in the process, but that's when we stepped in. We went somewhere to try to get her driver's license taken away. That isn't allowable in the state of Minnesota. So we did the next thing. We took the car battery out of her car, and she never drove again. So there are tons of roadblocks that we, as family members, found. I guess the best strength we got is when we formed this group to try to see what could be done and changes made to the law and whatnot. We proceeded to go down the criminal path with the girls that were involved in this, but being four of those were underage juveniles, their cases were held back from us because you're not allowed to know what the juvenile court is doing. Two of the girls were 18 at the time, and they spent each 20 days in jail for what they had done to our loved ones at the nursing home. You know, that is a big load for them to have, but 20 days seems pretty minor compared to the abuse that they were giving to all these people. So we're here today asking you to please consider these people as they pass away. The feelings that we have as a family don't end there at the gravesite. They needed to be represented, and we've done our best to do that. And that's why we're here today, to ask that you consider this bill and see what an important issue this is to the family members that were involved in cases similar to ours. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And Mr. Morris Blum?
Madam Chairman, my name is Morris Blum. I'm from Bryceland, Minnesota. That's in south central Minnesota, 30 miles west of Albert Lea. And I served as Sylvia's power of attorney when she was at Good Samaritan Center in Albert Lea. And in May, we got a call that there was employee misconduct. That's all they told us. We had no idea. In August, they were going to release the Minnesota Department of Health report on it. And they called us the day before, and they told us the kinds of abuse that had happened, and we just could not believe that this could happen at this nursing home. It was just teenage certified nursing assistants were more or less picking residents that had dementia, where they could not single them out, and they would take and poke and prod them and just try to agitate them. It was just a game for them, and that was their fun at work. And this abuse went on over 5 months, and it was when one other employee was fired, and during the exit interview she said, "You should check out these other CNAs," that they found out about this abuse. It could have gone on for many months more. It was kind of a lack of supervision of the CNAs where this was allowed to continue to happen. And the case of elder abuse we found when it goes to the court system needs to be put on a fast track. But with the lawyers, they'll tell you that they're not delaying things, but they have their discovery period and their time to work out a settlement between the parties. That all takes months and months, and there's appeals. It just keeps dragging out, and pretty soon your residents in the nursing home who are there because they're not in the very good health anyway, they start to pass away, and the case dies with the resident as far as the law is concerned here in Minnesota. That's why we're here, to see if we can get this changed.
Hey, thank you for your testimony, and sorry for your loss. Are there any questions, members?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members, and we appreciate your consideration and happy to come back and answer questions if they arise.
Thank you. Next we have, I don't know who wants to go next. I have Ben Peltier, Teresa from the Minnesota Medical Association, Mark Whitmore, and Bill Hart. I don't know who of you want to go first.
Madam Chair and the Conference Committee members, Bob Johnson. I'm with the Insurance Federation of Minnesota, but I'm also the board chair of an organization called Minnesotans for Lawsuit Reform. It's a formal organization of about 64,000 Minnesota employers, a number of chambers of commerce, trade associations that represent Minnesota businesses on civil justice related issues. So with that, Madam Chair, just I have a couple of comments, and then Mr. Hart, I know, has some more details on the wording of the bills. From our organization's perspective, there are other issues that have to be, in our opinion, at the table in, as part of this discussion of what happens with causes of action or these circumstances where the question is asked, should a lawsuit be permitted after the death of an individual? I know the committee has had, and just in the prior panel, had a packet of some statutes, citations from North Dakota and Wisconsin and South Dakota and Iowa and Montana and Kansas and Illinois. And just so the conference committee members know, here's what's important to bring to the table is that those statutes are what they are, but there are other parts of the state laws, those very states, that directly affect these actions that are before the conference committee. For instance, of those seven states, five of the seven have statutory caps on damages that directly affect that subsequent lawsuit that's permitted. So caps on damages, Madam Chair and committee members, are a whole another aspect of this debate and the public policy issue. And so these states, while they did decide that the death didn't stop or abate the lawsuit, as part of that decision, specifically decided that we need to draw a box around the non-economic damages, the general damages, the pain and suffering, all those phrases that describe it. And so I think, Madam Chair, if you look at those states, so Wisconsin, and they actually, Wisconsin's is brand new. I don't have the citation because when states pass damage caps, there's often civil litigation that challenges whether or not it's constitutional to cap damages. So, you know, we can follow up and give the committee references and citations. Wisconsin had such a process, and it went through their appellate courts. And their first damage cap was thrown out, and they just repassed a $750,000 cap on non-economic damages. North Dakota and South Dakota each have a $500,000 cap on non-economic damages. Iowa does not have a cap. Montana, $250,000. Kansas, $250,000 cap. Illinois had a cap that their legislature passed, and they had their Supreme Court that struck it down. So there's the experience of the seven. I didn't get copies, Madam Chair, for the conference committee, but I will bring them back or leave it. There's 32 states with specific statutory damage caps that are applicable in this very same scenario of a civil litigation that would survive the death of an individual. So that, Madam Chair, is an important part of the debate. So it's, you can't separate the not abating the suit if you're looking at other states. You have to look at what those other states are doing. And it's not even necessarily an apples-to-apples comparison, so you actually have to get into the state statutes, in my opinion, because there's even kind of more detailed differences as to how the actions are shaped. So we don't think it's as simple as just saying, well, they don't abate it by the death. Without getting into the statute, there's another level of detail. But the one I pointed out, I think, is the most important one to point out. And so I think as this issue goes forward, we think it's not only fair, it should be part of the discussion. And I think damage caps, Minnesota actually had a damage cap. People may not remember the history of this if you reach back a few decades. We had a damage cap from 1986 to 1990. The legislature repealed the damage cap in 1990. It actually went to our appellate courts. The chief authors, because it was a conference committee, the chief authors of that damage cap was former Senator Bill Luther on the Senate side and former State Representative Kathleen Blatz, who went on to become a Minnesota Supreme Court Chief Justice. So we had an era, 1986 to 1990. It was repealed in 1990, so we obviously don't have any damage cap, but I'm just referencing that because there is some history, even in Minnesota, with an acknowledgement that damage caps are appropriately part of this discussion and what's the liability that's created in this instance it would be in this area. So I think with that, Madam Chair, I mean, from our perspective, we believe that is an important part of the discussion, and having a broad open, wide open wrongful death statute that brings pain and suffering damages as part of that litigation is a very significant public policy change with significant ramifications in terms in every area where you have wrongful death cases. I know Mr. Hart, who is a litigator, I think can better maybe address that issue, bringing pain and suffering or general or non-economic damages into a wrongful death lawsuit. But we'd encourage the committee to include these considerations as you look at these two bills. And thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Mr. Hart, please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Bill Hart, and I am an attorney here in Minneapolis. And I was one of the attorneys who worked on the case that there was testimony about, the nursing home case that there was testimony about this morning. And I'm just here to offer some observations about the law and to answer questions, but just give the committee some things to consider about how the law is supposed to work. The bill that is before the committee deals with the tort system, and our tort system is a system of compensation. That's the purpose of having a tort system, is to give compensation to people who have compensation coming under our law. And what this bill does is it allows someone other than the victim of the misdoing to recover for the victim's pain and suffering damages. And so that's the point that I would really like the committee to bear in mind as you think about this bill. It's allowing someone other than the victim to recover that victim's pain and suffering damages. The reason that we have pain and suffering damages is to allow compensation for the person who is injured, and the compensation is measured by what that person experiences during his or her lifetime. And so when a case goes to a jury, the jury is instructed to compensate that person for as long as you believe that person will be living. There is no desire for the law. There is no reason under the law to have a jury award someone damages that they can then pass on to another generation as an inheritance. And so the thing that I would like the committee to really focus on in terms of what this bill seems to try to accomplish is that it provides a compensation for someone other than the victim, and that's not why we have a tort system. It's true that there that as some of the family victims talked about today, there is a need for accountability in situations when people misbehave and abuse others, and we have systems for that. It's just not the tort system. And so accountability can come through administrative law, accountability can come through the criminal law, but the purpose of the tort system is for compensation, and that's what we believe it should be used for, and not to provide a different, and not to serve a different function. There's already enough burden on our tort system just to function as it's supposed to function. And so we ask the committee to think about those things. Another thing that I think is really important, just with regard to the earlier testimony, you understand that the victims of these acts at the nursing home passed away from their own natural causes. And it's true that during their lifetime they experienced abuse at the hands of their nursing assistants. But what I would like the committee to bear in mind is that had these victims actually passed away from the abuse itself, these family members would not be entitled to the compensation that this bill would provide for them under the circumstances where they died of their natural causes. Under our wrongful death statute, surviving family members do not receive compensation for the what occurred, the conscious pain and suffering of someone who has passed away, even if they are the cause of that person's death. Someone mentioned drunk driver, but there can be many other things that lead to a person's death, a long illness in a medical malpractice action, for example. Under our current law, even if you are responsible for another person's death, the victim's surviving family members do not recover the types of damages that are provided for in this bill. And so that's another thing that I think is very important for the committee to take a look at. As far as and then I guess there's just one further point that I would like to make. The structure of the statute as it exists right now is there's a 573.01 is the general rule about whether causes of action survive. And then the exception is in the wrongful death statute. It's vitally important, regardless of what the committee decides to do and whether the committee changes the law at all, it's vitally important for the 573.01 to exist and move forward, and that the any changes be built off of that. And I believe the earlier attorney for the Minnesota Association for Justice, I believe that's what he was saying as well, that there would be unintended consequences if the committee decides to recommend exceptions and doesn't build those exceptions off of 573.01. So it's very important that that be done. And just as a final note, as I look through the side by side, there are terms in those proposed bills that really don't make legal sense. There's a difference between an action and a cause of action. Actions do not abate. Causes of action abate. And those are legal terminologies, and when those things get presented to a court, the court is going to understand the difference. And as they're written right now, the court is going to say this doesn't make a whole lot of sense based on what our what the current state of the law is, what these terms mean under our law. And so I would ask the committee to also pay close attention to and have counsel take a look at the meanings of the terms and how they interact with current law.
Okay. Mr. Atkins was
no,
first.
I'd rather get okay. through the testimony.
Mr. Cornish?
Madam Chair, a couple observations. I think it was rather crass of you to term this as passing on an inheritance. I don't think that was proper to say that, to look at this as if the victims, the secondary victims here, is looking forward to getting a purse to pass on as an inheritance. I think they more look at it as compensation. Secondly, I think that you're talking about the system exists. Now we're talking about changing it. I think you should, keep that in mind. It's good to have instruction what the common tort system is, but I think you're missing the point of the testifiers there, that the common system isn't really working for them, and they're looking a little more at the justice side of it. Just observations.
Yes, thank you, and Madam Chair. I understand your points and appreciate them. Thank you. Did you want me to respond to any part of that?
Okay, Representative Atkins.
Mr. Hart, thank you for your testimony. In the packet, all the neighboring states all seem to have survivorship statutes. Is there one that you prefer in terms of the language being most clear?
Well, I don't know that I really I don't feel that's why I'm here to. But no, there isn't any one that I've looked at that I prefer because. Really, my purpose in being here is just to talk about the underlying reasons for them, and so I haven't studied, precisely how they work in other states, although as Mr. Johnson was saying, there are caps in other states. And I might also add that many of these provisions in other states were enacted quite a while back, a lot of them in the 40s, 50s, and 60s, when the tort system was expanding, and we were recognizing ever more expansive tort liability. And I think that in today's tort environment, that consideration needs to be taken a look at as well. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you both. Next, we have still on the list Ben Peltier, Teresa, and Kate Noodler, and then Mark Whitmore.
Good morning, Senator Dietzek, Representative Atkins, members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to discuss some of this proposed legislation today. I'm a lawyer at the Bassford Remley firm in Minneapolis, and I spend most of my career handling medical negligence cases on behalf of the various hospitals and health systems in town. And the proposed legislation that is in front of you, both the Senate and the House versions of it, have significant issues that the hospitals are very concerned about. And as a matter of introduction, I should also say with me is Ben Peltier from the Minnesota Hospital Association and Ms. Teresa Knadler, who's here on behalf of the Minnesota Medical Association. And I think we share in our concerns about this legislation.
And Mr. Whitmore, could you just state your name for the record?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Thank you.
I skipped that part. Mark Whitmore, Whitmore. Apologize.
That's okay. Continue, please. Thank you.
Minnesota has been a leader in health care for many years, and both in terms of providing high quality of health care, but also from the hospital and physician perspective, we believe that as we have today, the issues that impact this bill, we do have a fair and judicious tort system, one that is about liability, responsibility, and fairness. As a matter of background, the most hospitals in town because of the insurance crisis and their inability to obtain insurance at reasonable prices, have had to go to a self-insured model. So the changes in these bills, in both versions of these bills, have a very direct impact on patient care because it goes straight to the bottom line. It's important to understand that hospitals, unlike other businesses, unlike insurance companies, do not have the ability to simply pass that on to their members. The compensation rates are generally fixed through reimbursement and things of the like. We also are not like insurance companies where we can just pass this off and share the risk amongst a multitude of other providers. They're self-insured, and that's why this is such a direct impact on hospitals and to the same extent physician groups. Also, with respect to the tort system, as I said, they most are self-insured. Hospitals, we see ourselves as pillars in a community. We try to own up to our mistakes, and we work very hard at doing so. And as a lawyer who oftentimes represents them, those are my marching orders. Recognize that we are part of a community, and if we make a mistake, step up. In the past handful of years in our tort system, we've had significant changes that have directly impacted the medical profession in terms of cost and in changes in the law. The legislation that's being discussed today is perhaps the most significant. In the recent years, the Supreme Court, less than a year ago, the Supreme Court created a new cause of action called loss of chance. It's also watered down the expert review statute, which was a very important part of tort reform when that came through. If we go back a little bit further, maybe 10 years, the statute of limitations that applies to medical negligence claims went from 2 years to now 4 years. The consequence of all of this is increased cost in resolving cases, and fairly resolving those cases, which is our preference. And now what's happening is the discussion to possibly expand that further, to increase damages awards, increase defense costs, increase the ability to resolve cases fairly. Now, the legislation that is in front of you, we believe, is extremely broad and over-inclusive. It basically creates two types of additional damages. One is it creates a situation in which an individual passes away while their lawsuit was pending, and that was what the earlier people testified to. But it goes far beyond that. The legislation that's in front of you, and I would have to agree that it has a number of terms which, frankly, for those of us who are out dealing with laws in the courtroom, are somewhat difficult to follow. But in addition to the cases that we talk about that the family so eloquently discussed, was it also impacts death cases, wrongful death cases, which are governed under MnSTAT Section 573.02. We have, for many, many years, had law on the book which provides that if a person or an entity is responsible for causing the death of the other, that they are entitled to damages, and we statutorily set that up, and that's been the case for many years. That's the second type of cases that this legislation will impact, and that's those are situations very different and aside from those which were discussed about the abuse that was discussed earlier. And that's even a bigger issue. The problem with it is we've always had something called pecuniary loss, which defines the scope of the remedy in a wrongful death case. Both the House and the Senate bills, they take this to a new extreme, and they no longer would pecuniary loss arguably be the law, but quite possibly would take it to additional ends. And from the hospital's perspective, what's happening is it's going to result in real Minnesota dollars that could be going to health care, go to staffing, nurses, and things of that nature, which we just will not have the funds to do. It's been suggested in our discussions over the last, as we've watched this bill come through, that perhaps this will only impact a few cases per year. I would have to disagree with that. The proposed legislation, both in the House version and in the Senate version, what it will do, as I said, those types of cases, yes, it only impacts a few cases, such as the ones that were described earlier, but it's the other groups of cases, the cases that haven't been brought, the cases that involve wrongful death actions, and it's changing the dynamic of what's recoverable. And with all due respect, both the House and the Senate bill, they go well beyond, the intended consequence. It's a broad and widespread piece of legislation, and that's the issue with it. It has to be scoped and to address the specific concerns which are here. I'd like to wrap up by just reiterating, we do have remedies for death cases. We do have remedies for people who are injured. But this will strike at the bottom line. So I think it's essential that we find a narrow compromise to address these issues, one which, as was suggested earlier, keeps the basic construct of MnSTAT Section 573.01 in place, and one which is designed specifically and is limited, if it were to happen at all, to specific circumstances. The legislation, with all due respect, that's in front of you, is far too broad and has a vast impact well beyond, I think, what the intended consequences are. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Whitmore. And then who's next?
Just a thought. You don't like either pieces of legislation, but quite frankly, something's going to happen here. Okay? So I suggest that you and the people concerned, maybe the change might come in 573.01 and possibly the cap. So my point is, you might not like either bill, but quite frankly, we're here with possibly to compromise a little bit. So I would suggest that you and others look at and point yourself in that direction, and I'm sure you're thinking of that.
Yeah, thank you.
Something's going to happen.
Appreciate that.
Mr. Whitmore, did you have any additional comment?
Thank you, Senator. And if I may respond, that's something that we've to talk with the various entities about.
Thank you. And now Ms. Knadler or Mr. Peltier, I don't know if either one of you had any comments.
You want to say anything?
Sure. Madam Chairman, thank you for the time today. I want to reiterate that something that was touched on a little bit earlier, but I think is really important from the perspective of the over 9,000 physician members of the Minnesota Medical Association. As I think you probably all are aware, we and our lobbyists are not up here advocating for tort reform every year. And there are some states where that is the case, in fact, where it's an ongoing yearly battle. And that's because we believe that this is a system that largely works. We have a personal injury and wrongful death paradigm that is very complicated, as has been stated, and involves many pieces that work together in a way that adequately addresses those who are injured or otherwise receive subpar care. This legislation, both pieces of legislation, would throw that into a disequilibrium that would put us in the company of other states that are engaging in ongoing tort reform struggles that have premiums so high that their entire subsections of providers, specifically obstetricians and other high-risk providers, who simply don't practice in the state any longer. And so this implicates not just dollars, but also care, access to care, and sort of the equilibrium that we currently operate under that effectively balances the interests at stake here. Thank you.
Thank you. And Mr. Peltier.
Senator Ben Peltier from the Minnesota Hospital Association. I just wanted to add two quick points. I think, first off, it's important for you to know and to hear from us that this types of stories that we hear and we see, the case that was discussed in the first panel, as well as other things we see in the newspapers, they're crushing to hospital employees, hospital administrators, and people in the healthcare field. They take them even more personally, I think, than the general public does sometimes, because of the people that are in this field and doing this work they care. They're doing their very possible best, and they hate it when they see the industry or a particular class of healthcare providers dragged through the mud. So that's something I want to make sure that you're aware of. We our members and our employees and our staff are committed to making sure that people have the care they need when they need it in the most effective and efficient manner. And as a result of the commitment that Minnesota providers, Minnesota hospitals, Minnesota nursing homes, Minnesota physicians have, we are, you know, independently reviewed constantly as a nation leader in quality, as well as efficiency and effectiveness of providing high quality care. The other thing I'd like to say, following up on Senator Metzen's point, it would be very helpful to get some direction from you on what it is, the types of cases we're trying to address here. I don't think anybody would tell you that the types of things that went on in Albert Lea would be the type that wouldn't be entitled to compensation. But I think Mark's point and some other points that we've heard is the drafts that we have in front of them are much broader than just those types of cases. So if we can identify, if you can help us identify what it is that is most concerning in addition to the cases that we discussed earlier, I think that would be helpful for the ongoing discussions that we're having or that we need to have as this goes forward. And I thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. I'm Representative Atkins.
And thank you. Thank all of you for joining us this morning. And I think Minnesota's lowest med mail rates in the country are attributable to the fact that we have folks that do a great job. We've got terrific hospitals, terrific physicians, and we also have that affidavit requirement that I think last year there were fewer than 100 medical malpractice actions in Minnesota, something like that. So the scenario, and I gave you a little bit of time to prepare for this, Mr. Whitmore. I think the other two heard about it as well. The scenario that I described for you this morning actually is one of Senator Metzen's constituents, and I've altered the names a little bit, but B and Don, who I talked about earlier today when we met. B was 81 years old when she suffered just a horrific injury to her ankle, broke it in multiple places. This is a woman that was dancing and bowling, and she was living the sort of life everyone wants to live. And Don was as well, doing all the same things. Shatters her ankle for a year and a half. She's going through horrific pain that nothing could control her pain. And Don is her caregiver, and they're trying to make the best of it that they can. We just had the sense. We knew that the insurance company, frankly, was just extending as long as they could how long this was going to take in hopes that she would die. We ended up settling for probably less than we should have because of that concern that she was nearing the end of her life. She was no longer able to do the things that she had. We settled her case for less than we could because Don was concerned and she was concerned that she was going to pass away. That's the kind of, when you asked Ms. Pelter about the sort of scenario, that's one of them. And no question that the person who caused this was negligent. In fact, I think at one point they pretty much said that they owned up to that. But if she had passed away, all of that suffering that she had gone through and all those sorts of things, which Don and any spouse who's been around somebody that's in this situation knows that they're feeling that pain just like. Would you object to having a survivorship law like the states around us that would apply in a situation like that?
Madam Chair?
Yep, Mr. Whitmore.
To Representative Atkins' point, some of the language that we've talked about in a pending claim would allow that type of survivorship or pending action. And that's something that a limitation, which obviously is part of the Senate bill, and there's other issues associated with the Senate bill, which I think are problematic. But a pending limitation, if in the case that you suggest, Representative Atkins, if that case were pending, that claim would survive. And as we talked informally earlier, is that a concern that this case is going to be brought into suit too soon if that happens? Well, we do have the ability in Minnesota, unlike most states, under our rules to allow that action to be brought, not filed with the court, to allow informal discussions, perhaps such as you raise informally, and that case does not even need to go to the court system for a full year. So I would suggest that in the situation that you suggest, that the pending limitation would help or would alleviate that problem or that concern.
Madam Chair,
Mr.
Whitmore, I'd also suggest for consideration that if that sort of claim is already one that's being, and this would apply in your situation as well, and I appreciate the fact that you guys said, if something bad happens, we own up to it. We're accountable for it. If that happens, and you've already figured out that this is the kind of, you know, it's crass as it may sound, sometimes, you know, in your books, you're already figuring, we're going to have to pay out $500,000, or we're going to have to pay out $1 million. How does it cause a problem then to, in the event that that person passes away, is it not, let me try to phrase it differently, is there not currently under existing law an incentive for you to wait and hope that that person will pass away from some other set of circumstances so that you don't have to pay out that $500,000 or $1 million? You follow what I'm saying, Mr. Whitmore?
Mr. Whitmore.
Representative Atkins, to your point, I understand the concept you're talking about, but I think that with all due respect, what happens in a case, it's evaluated in the big picture, and I don't necessarily know that there's an effort to wait it out. That's why we have judges who regulate cases and act as the gatekeeper for them. So if there's a case that is brought and filed in Hennepin County or Ramsey County or Dakota County, wherever the case may be, the lawyers work together with the court to come up with a meaningful scheduling order and to set the case for trial at an appropriate time. What happens then often is the lawyers on behalf of the plaintiff in those situations will raise these very direct issues with the court. My client is in this type of situation. Can we expedite it? And it's not at all uncommon for that to happen. So that's an important role that our judges play in this state, is to do just that and to listen and to discuss these with the lawyers. In fact, the Supreme Court I forget if it was July 1st or August 1st of last year, they actually came up with a way to streamline cases through the court system to get them to hearing more quickly. You can put a fast track, and in several counties, I believe Washington County is one of them, have that type of mechanism in place to allow that to happen. And that's a real life circumstances that also goes to assist people like Madam B or Mr. D, I forget the names you gave me, to have their case heard timely and fairly and adjudicated in that fashion.
And Madam Chair and Mr. Whitmore, and that's fair, and I appreciate that. I think that's probably the case in the vast majority of cases. Most lawyers, most judges are very ethical people that will try to move cases along. What I concern myself with, we have this perverse incentive to not do that. Right now, under current law, there's actually an incentive to not settle the case, to not get the case to trial. And in those cases where you have those lawyers, it might not be as ethical as people like you and me. That would present a problem. So, and that's why I believe that so many of the states around us and across the country have a survivorship statute. I'll ask the same question, and this will be my last one. I ask the same question to Mr. Hart. You have, of the neighboring states, is there preferred language? If ours is kind of problematic, we've got statutes in the neighboring states. Some have been on the books for the better part of 6 or 7 decades. Is there one that you would prefer?
Madam Chair, if I may, to respond to your first point, the pending takes care of that concern of yours. I really believe that it does. To your second question, honestly, I haven't gone through all of those statutes. I know one thing that's different is we have, as Mr. Hart discussed, we have 573.01 as our basic construct. And I think whatever we do would have to be within that. And I certainly take heed to the comments by Senator Metzen for people to sit down and figure something out that might be palatable. But honestly, I just was handed that stuff, and I would need the opportunity to review it.
Madam Chair, Mr. Whitmore, thank you.
Any other questions or comments, members? Anybody else from the audience that wishes to testify? Mr. Carlson, do you want to come back? Mr. Carlson, welcome back.
Madam Chair and members, just briefly on a couple of issues. One of which I want the committee to know that our association has been working and trying to reach out to the hospital associations and others as early as January, and this is the first time I've had a chance to hear what their concerns are, and we're happy to sit down and talk with them, but that's a two-way street. And that is not a lack of effort on Representative Atkins' part or my part to try and get to the table to find out what the legitimate concerns are. As it relates to damage caps, I just want you to remember that of the states that they mentioned, Wisconsin, North Dakota, South Dakota, their caps only apply to medical malpractice cases. Not the people sitting here. Only in medical negligence cases, not in a dram shop case, not in a general injury case. They only apply to medical malpractice cases, and that's pretty uniform across the country. There are a few states that apply a cap to just general cases, but it was an effort to get at the issue of the cost of medical liability insurance. And what do we know about medical liability insurance in Minnesota? According to the Medical Liability Monitor, Minnesota has the lowest rate of malpractice insurance in the country. We can't get any lower. We are lower than every state that has a cap, and we're about half of the premium for the state that has had the longest running cap, California, which has had a $250,000 cap on non-economic damages since the middle 70s. And the average premium in California is $29,000, and the average premium in Minnesota is about $12,000. We are lower than every single state because I believe we have a good system in place. And Representative Atkins mentioned we only had 98 cases of medical negligence filed in Minnesota. And to put that in perspective, there were slightly over 100 reportable adverse events in Minnesota during that same year. Never supposed to happen, injuries, preventable injuries to patients. This is not going to open up any floodgate of litigation against hospitals, nursing cares. It doesn't change the injury at all. It doesn't change your cause of action. It doesn't create a new cause of action. All it allows, like in all of our neighboring states and everywhere that I can find in the country, all it allows is your full damages to survive to your family. And I think that that is an important thing to keep in mind. The other thing, and Bob Johnson mentioned it, I voted against the $400,000 cap in 1986. It was a bad idea then, and it was repealed in 1990 because it did not work. It didn't save a single dollar. Not a single dollar was saved by caps on damages. This is an effort by families to receive justice and in fairness. Unfairness, Representative Atkins, in your case, if you settled it on day one and those damages were paid, take the other case where someone hasn't settled. In that instance, if Millie died, her damages survive for her estate. If I die and I haven't reached that settlement, there is nothing for the family. That's unfair, and that's what we're trying to fix. Madam Chair and members, we're happy to look through these language, causes of action, and the differences that they have pointed out today, but we really think this is an important bill for you to move forward for Minnesotans, and I don't believe it's going to do the kind of injustice that has been suggested and will provide some measure for a limited number of cases for families who are seeking justice. Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Thank you. And for the audience and interested parties, I would encourage you to get together and try to find a resolution or a compromise, or at least share with us what both sides can live with and what they feel is the best language. And at this time, I know the House members have another conference committee, and so we will recess to the call of the chair.
Yeah.
And with that, we are adjourned.